You're listening to The Startup.
How's it going, Los Angeles? This is The Startup with Monique LeRae. I'm Monique LeRae. Happy Sunday. Welcome back to my show. And, you know, listen, I'm excited to be here with you guys. We have a full, packed, amazing, talented panel this show. So I want to just circle back and give you guys another plug. We're still casting single heterosexual men, 6 feet and taller, 30 to 40 years old, for one of the four major networks in the U.S. To be broadcast on a bachelor-style dating show with a twist. Please go to lovesearchtv.com. I'm helping some of my colleagues cast this show. Listen, I know you single people out there having a good time being single. I'm a single person. But maybe you have a friend that's just great with everything else and needs a little push in love. Why not have one of the major networks help them find love? And you could have the bragging rights for seeing them on TV. To my coupled couples, I know you know somebody. It could be anywhere. They could be anywhere in the U.S. He's successful on paper, but maybe he just needs a little push. All right. That's what we're looking for. Without further ado, I want to bring out my first guest, Dr. Laura Crashaw. Dr. Laura, how's it going?
It's going very well, Monique. Thank you.
All right, great. So I would love for you to introduce yourself to our listeners and viewers. Tell us exactly who you are and what you got going on.
Sure. My name's Laura Crashaw. I've been coaching bosses who bully for over 35 years. I'm known as the Boss Whisperer. And I've learned a lot in the course of coaching these individuals, which I'm happy to share with you. I don't call them bullies myself. I call them abrasive leaders, because what I discovered is the majority of these individuals don't intend to do harm. In fact, they're not even aware they're doing harm. And when you call somebody a bully, it implies that they intend to do harm. I prefer the term abrasive or abrasive leaders, because it means you rub people the wrong way in the workplace. So that's my background. Started out as a psychotherapist and then a researcher, author, executive coach, and I also train other coaches in the method I developed for coaching bosses who bully.
Wow, what a great way to apply your expertise and your, you know, applied profession. Like, I'm just amazed. How did you land here? Like, was it out of curiosity? Were you bullied? Were you abrasive? What happened?
Actually, no. It happened many years ago when I was up in Alaska. I'm a bit of an adventurer, and I was working for a little tiny company that provided employee assistance programs. This is private confidential counseling for employees of, say, the oil companies or, you know, other companies up in Alaska. One day, I got a request for an emergency appointment. A guy comes in. He goes, "I'm really mad at my boss." I said, "How? Tell me more." He says, "Well, he makes fun of me, calls me names," and this whole litany of bullying behaviors. And he said, "I'm really mad." I said, "How mad are you?" And he said, "I'm thinking of killing him." And I said, "Have you thought of how you do that?" And he said, "Yeah, my gun's out in the truck."
What?
Yes.
Oh, you were his last stop?
Yes.
First stop?
I was his last
stop. The only stop?
And I asked him, I said, "Would you be willing to hand over the gun?" And I'll never forget the look of relief in his eyes as he handed over the gun. And Monique, that wasn't the only gun we collected. Now, that was my first acquaintance with workplace bullying and the terrible suffering that it causes. Terrible suffering. So that's how it was way back when. And I had two questions. One is, why would a boss do that to their employee? And the second question is, he'd reported it to human resources. Why didn't the company do anything about it? And I've answered both of those questions over, you know, listening and learning over that period of time.
What an interesting, like, wow. First of all, you saved a couple of lives, and you also saved trauma for those, you know, the families, the fallout for the families, the friends, the community, right? And then you kind of launched another brand within, like, what a niche brand, but also very necessary, because you're actually you're creating value for these brands, for these people, for these companies to avoid liability and harm.
Absolutely. Like, I founded the Boss Whispering Institute, and we're dedicated to research and training in the field of coaching abrasive leaders. And our mission is to relieve suffering in the workplace caused by abrasive leaders. And these leaders were my greatest teachers. I started talking to them, and I had no idea why they behaved the way they did. And so I learned a couple things. First of all, the common belief is that there are all these evil, you know, demons that wake up in the morning gleefully thinking how can they torment their coworkers. No, what I discovered was the vast majority had no idea that their behaviors were causing suffering. They were clueless. And secondly, that when they were made aware of it, that they many times were remorseful and almost inevitably embarrassed, and they started to change their ways. How did I discover this? I'd interview their coworkers, I'd purge that data of identifying information, I'd bring it back into them. And when they went through the feedback, they would go into shock. They'd say, I can't believe people think I want to hurt them. I'm just trying to get the job done. And what I discovered was the reason they're so aggressive is they want to be perceived to be competent. And don't we all? That's not unusual. But if anything threatens that self-perception, they stirs tremendous anxiety, and they defend against that anxiety by going to what I call fight mode. They start barking and biting. They get aggressive to ward off the threat. So if somebody's not doing something as quickly as they want or in the way they want, they get really anxious and they get aggressive, and they're not. And they see that many times as noble and necessary. So the coaching method helps them with that, and it turns them around pretty quickly. So, you know, I'm proud of it. Yeah.
And imagine if you were out, you know, enjoying Alaska and you didn't take that call. You know, it's like, it's just, it's interesting. Yep. It's interesting that you help this person not knowing where it would take you, but I love what you're doing. And I love the feedback that you're saying these people do not realize. And I guess the saying is true. The same reason you love me is the same reason you hate me. So in the C-suite, the executives love this person because they get it done. And they
the rainmaker. Yep.
Yeah. Rainmaker. But now when you're dealing with people who are day to day functioning in and out of the operations and management, perhaps you aren't going to be able to move the same way without some help. So is it a narcissism issue? Is it a just get it done, just single eye?
It's an insecurity issue. It's insecurity, because if I feel competent and confident in myself, and somebody doesn't do something the way I want, I can stay calm. I can sit down. I can say, why aren't you getting it done? I can explore it, and I can work with them to come up with a solution. But these folks, they're basically kind of insecure. So if things aren't going the way they want, instead of being able to stay calm and get curious and explore, they just erupt. I use the term bark and bite, but they get aggressive because we got to get the job done. And, you know, my dad kicked my ass, and look where I am today, vice president. That's how you do it. You kick ass or whatever it is. And, you know, they need a little help. They need to develop a little psychological insight. And it's pretty thrilling to see it, because they turn around, and so do all the people who are suffering.
It starts from the top. And once they gain that emotional intelligence from you, when was the quickest turnaround? What was your most, you know, exciting, obviously the disarming the gunman at the top of the show. What is there another example of maybe when you had a pretty quick turnaround for an executive?
I mean, for instance, when I and the other people I've trained, we say that the employer will see demonstrable change by the third coaching session. And I'll give you an example of that. I worked with one individual, and he was the head of a manufacturing organization, and he would get very angry. And, you know, he'd lose it, and he'd have these, you know, outbursts. Now, he viewed this as being powerful and authoritative. And when he saw his feedback that said, and, you know, he will lose his temper, he's like an infant throwing temper tantrums day in and day out. And the minute he saw that, he thought he was coming across as powerful, but instead he was coming across as kind of infantile. And he turned to me and he said, how do I get things done without you know, losing my temper and yelling at people. And then that's when we work on some strategy. So yes, or people who use profanity and they think, no, it doesn't bother anybody. Very quickly, a lot of the behaviors will stop immediately. Some they need a bit of help with, but the coaching doesn't go on that long. Now, the concern I have these days is my second question, which is, well, what, you know, how do you stop them from behaving this way? I can't convince them to change as a coach. Only their superiors can tell them, look, you can't behave this way. I'm getting complaints. I may not have observed it myself, but these are negative perceptions and you've got to turn this around. And that's why I wrote my second book, Grow Your Spine and a Manage Abrasive Leadership Behavior, a guide for those who manage bosses who bully. Because what I discovered is their managers, they don't understand that they have to manage not only technical performance, you know, how well you write the software, how well you produce a show, but they also have to manage conduct, and they're afraid to do it. And so they're kind of spineless. And my book shows them how to do it because they're the only, HR can't stop it. Policies won't stop it. Legislation won't stop it. The only thing that can stop an abrasive leader is their superior. So that's kind of the crusade I'm on these days.
Wow, you're really handing it over, and it's like, hey guys, there's a blueprint yeah. here. Grow your spine and manage abrasive behaviors and leadership. And that, like, I love that. Where can people pick that book up?
Amazon, just right on Amazon. Just, you know, look for Grow Your Spine. Yeah, and you know, my concern is, I think the civility is deteriorating in society. We see all these, you know, videos of people losing it and verbally attacking each other. And that can't happen in the workplace because it destroys productivity. So the superiors of the abrasive leaders, they've really got to get their act together and learn how to manage conduct.
You're right. There is a disconnect in the C-suite. And guys, for those that are viewing that don't know the C-suite, CFO, you know, all the major people, CEO, all the people that are running it at the top. And there is a disconnect, I think, because CEOs that delegate things down, let's say you're having a problematic CFO or COO, chief operating officer, right? Then it's like they're paying them a really good salary. They might have had golf rounds. They trust that they get things done. They love that they're delivering numbers, but they're not asking questions.
Technically, they're great. It was so funny that you bring this example up because I had a CEO who had a CFO who was behaving badly. And I said to the CEO, have you ever sat down and talked to him about this? And he goes, no. And I said, why not? And he goes, my bad. I said,
right.
What?
It's a disconnect.
He was afraid.
They're afraid because everyone's kind of playing on the same. It's even though you might own the company, you're delegating to someone, like I said, that you are on the golf course with, or you've traveled with, or your family, friends. They don't want to hear bad feedback. Like, you don't have to be great at everything, including learning how to manage staff. You have to hire someone and delegate that out. Dr. Laura Crashaw can help you if you're in the C-suite and you are not getting it right. Maybe you got it right. You're at the top. But we don't have to be great at everything. We have to learn to manage our strengths, you know, maximize our strengths and minimize our weaknesses. Dr. Laura, who's your dream client on today that you would like to identify moving forward for the second half of the year?
My dream client, what I'd like to do is I'd like to have every single manager in the world buy my book. And then if they are dealing with an abrasive leader, refer them for specialized coaching and it will solve the problem. You don't have to fire these people. They can turn around if they're helped. So that's my thought. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's a reason why you're paying them a great wage. Let's shine just a beautiful diamond that needs a little shining.
Exactly.
Let's not throw this away.
Yes, absolutely, Monique.
Yes, I love that. Thank you for what you do. It's amazing. And any word from your Alaskan friend? Hopefully he's holding up okay.
Yeah. It's just thrilling to see the suffering stop. Yes, and it did. And like I said, I'll never forget the look of relief because he didn't want to kill this person, but he was just at the end of his rope. And instead of doing that, he came in and he got help. So what a good thing. Yeah.
What a story. Oh my goodness. We need more time to explore it. But Laura Crashaw's got that new book out, guys. Grow Your Spine and Manage Abrasive Behavior in the Workplace. Guys, go on Amazon, support this woman. She's doing great work. She's doing light work out here for folks that are stuck maybe without the right
and tools. Also, Monique, if you're being bullied in a company and they're not doing anything about it, it's only $9.59, and you can deliver it to higher management anonymously and say, please, please do something about Paul or Marie or something.
You know what? I love that. I have someone in my MBA class that actually might benefit from your book, and it's going to be his stocking stuffer. He just doesn't know it yet.
There you go.
Make it an anonymous stocking stuffer. Yep. Thank you for being here. I hope you come back, and I know your sales are going to be amazing. Thank you for doing what you do.
You're very kind. Thank you.
Thank you so much. All right, guys. Now I have my next guest, Jessica Dehaney. Jessica, how's it going?
Hi. How are you?
Hey, girlfriend. All right. Go ahead and introduce yourself to our listeners and viewers. Tell us who you are.
I'm Dehaney. I am a best-selling author and businesswoman out of Long Island, New York, and I'm so delighted to be here. So thank you for having me.
Congratulations. It's an absolute pleasure. I'm so excited to hear about superpower. And how did you dial into this? What led you on this path to write this book?
Well, my newest book is available for pre-release right now, and it's called Self is Superpower. And the thing that made me write it is, as a woman, a parent, excuse me, I don't want to just say woman, but that's my perspective since I am a woman. I really found it difficult to kind of like have all the roles and still have a semblance of my sense of myself. And I found myself like 7 years ago as a business owner, I owned a bunch of barbershops, and I just kind of didn't know who I was anymore. I had like lost myself in the roles that I play and at home. And the way that I was able to get out of the hole was to actually get selfish. And when I tell people that, they're so appalled because we've been trained to believe that that's a really bad thing. And so I wrote this book to inspire people to use it as a tool and a superpower to really create a life that you love. When you do that, you become happier. And when you're happier, the people around you get happier too. So it's not just an act of selfishness. It's actually an act of love for the people that you care about because they get a better version of you. And that's what inspired me to write the book, because I figured that out the hard way. And I'd rather people not have to go through all of that to figure it out for themselves.
What a beautiful way to pay it forward, right? Like, you're in the middle of this and you didn't have to do that for anyone else, but you did because you just want to have a better community perhaps around you and to share that good news. I remember speaking with Iyanla Van Zandt last holiday season when I was in Maryland, and she said, you know, she always says, what's in my cup is for me and what overflows is for you. So if my cup's not full, I can't give you anything, you know, and it's really important to like have, she calls it instead of selfish, she calls it self full.
Oh, I like that. I like that.
Self-full. Yeah. So I love
that. Positive way to spin it, I think.
Right. But, you know, I love that you recognize this early on in your career and you're like, let me turn this on the head. So you shifted from owning barbershops, you said, and now you're an author and an entrepreneur. Tell us more about that.
Well, I still own my barbershops. I actually was a lawyer back in the day. I like to say I'm recovering now. That job didn't make me happy at all. And when I had my daughters, I have daughters, and they like mean the world to me. And so when I say get selfish, like, it's really important for everyone to understand that these kids are everything to me. Like, I love them. We're super close. It's just the three of us. I've gotten divorced from their dad. So it's just us. So it was really hard for me to be putting myself because I thought that would make me a terrible mom. But the problem was I was kind of forced into it because during quarantine and COVID, my barbershops got shut down and I had no way to support my family. And I was kind of like, well, what am I going to do now? And I had to figure it out. And writing gave me that outlet to discover who I am and put my thoughts to paper and realize, well, like, I have a lot of value to add to people. You know, I have this whole career on Wall Street as a lawyer. Then I own barbershops for the last 12 years, and I've been really successful at that in a man's world. Like, I'm a woman owning a man's barbershop.
Right.
And this could be valuable to people. And I started to really be like, I have a story to tell. I have insight that could help other people out there against tough times. And so that's what I started writing about initially. So I wrote about my leaving Wall Street, opening barbershops, how difficult that transition was from the corporate world to small business. And I just fell in love with the whole writing process. And I ended up speaking on a lot of this. And that was kind of my second come up, because in order to do that, I had to leave my, and that killed me. Like, I really remember like sitting on the floor of my bedroom thinking like, how could I leave them? How could I leave them to go do something that I love? Like, that's so selfish. How dare you? You have a successful business and like, you want more. Like, what more could you want? We talk to ourselves like that. And it's so negative. And yeah. I thought I did anyway, because something inside of me was like, you need to do this. It will change your life. And that's what the second book is about, because it was only when I put myself first that I was really able to elevate my kids too. Like that me, I was home a lot. I had a business that ran itself. I didn't have to go to work every day. I was at PTA stuff, the field trips, like everything a stay-at-home mom does, but also having a business. So I kind of fit into both worlds. But I was kind of just blah. Like, I didn't feel that excitement about life. And I didn't feel that intrigue that you get when you're trying something new and yourself to your intellectual limit. And that's the only reason I had to go out and get selfish. And it didn't seem like enough, right? So I kind of put it off. I'm like, hey, you don't need to do that. But then when COVID hit and I didn't have income, it kind of pushed me and forced me. And what I realized was my kids might have seen me less, but they got the more like radiant version of me, because I was so happy. I was like doing something I loved. And suddenly I would come home to them as a better, happier parent. And it clicked. Like, how could I tell them to have a happy life and lead a happy life and grab their dreams?
Wow. It sounds like you really unlocked just the better version of yourself, and you are showing up for them and vibrating higher. And I like that you kind of naturally, your subconscious called you there, you know, in this roundabout way. We all kind of manifested some interesting things during the pandemic. I'll tell you that. I mean, right? We really learned how to sit still. Some of us, and we learned how to listen to the inner voice and the inner guidance, if you will, source, whatever people might call it, and just go for it. Some of us did some things on a bucket list. And so it sounds like you've got this amazing book. Guys, pick up Jessica's new book. Plug your book again, Jessica. Let's get all your handles in here where people can find
it. Yeah, I want to show it to you. Actually, I got the author proof. So this is
it. What? Oh, it's gorgeous. Mine's on its way to Laguna Beach, right? I'm waiting in the middle.
Yeah, I can send you one. No problem.
Girlfriend, I'm ready.
I feel like it's a message people really need to hear. And it actually it was released for pre-sale. It hit Barnes & Noble bestseller, which I'm excited about.
You guys, we got a piece of gold right here, honey. We speaking to a star in Long Island.
I just feel like it's the opportunity is ripe, because I feel like when you use COVID, people really started thinking about like, what am I doing with my life? Like, it became evident that life could be taken from us so quickly, right? So why not book the trip, do the thing, take your dreams and make them happen? So that's the story that I'm telling, is how I've done that. So I hope it inspires other people to keep going and not lose that high vibration. And you can get them on barnesandnoble.com or on my website, which is jessicadenahy.com. And you can find me on all the socials, which are at thejessicadenahy.com on Instagram, TikTok, book, anywhere. I'm everywhere. I try to be everywhere.
She's worldwide. Jessica, give us a little, if you don't mind, my dear, if someone is moving from, you have moved from corporate on Wall Street as a lawyer, right? So you have that macro view of like what it is, and you see the landscape of business through your legal lens, I'm presuming. But if someone doesn't have that, right? But they're moving from a corporate job or perhaps starting up a barbershop and now wanting to write. Are there any little nuggets of gold that you can maybe give another single mom out there or single dad or, you know, somebody that's working towards something and they're, you know, they don't have a huge support system, but they want to publish a book? Any nuggets of gold?
Yeah, I mean, well, first off, if you're a single parent, you got to remember, like, everything you say and do is going to create the little people behind you. Like, your kids are watching you, especially when you're a single parent. You're all they've got. Like, yeah. you're everything. Your movement to be mimicked by them. So as much as we try to say, let's put ourselves last and that's what's best for the kids, by putting ourselves last, we're teaching them to do that for themselves. And I know that's not what any of you want to teach. So don't go put yourself first here and there, not every single moment, but more than you are now is going to help them pave the way for their happy life. And that's really what we all want as parents. In business, what I can say is stop second guessing yourself. You have this intuition inside of you. We all do from when we're babies. Like, we know when someone cradles a baby and they're uncomfortable, the baby knows. That's our intuition. We don't ever stop having that. We just push it to the side of our brain. As our brain grows and our logic continues to evolve, we listen to that less and less. It's still there. Like, if you're having something call to you, stop ignoring it, you know, just kind of go with your gut and allow yourself to explore the opportunity. And, you know, maybe it's not going to hit it out of the park the first time. I certainly didn't. And it's important to remember that and to just keep going. And when you remember that your kids are watching you, I think for me, that just keeps pushing me, because if I show them that I'm going to give up, it gives them permission to give up on themselves and their dreams. And I will not allow that. So
not on her watch, kids, not on her watch. Okay.
It's so true. I want them to not give up so easily. I think for one thing business owners do is give up too soon. They expect within a year to have a successful business that's making tons of money. And the truth is, like, it's not going to happen that way for the most part. And it doesn't mean that it can't be successful. Sometimes it just needs that DLC. So just be prepared financially to take a leap, because you're gonna need the capital. But don't give up too fast either. It's like finding that harmony between your aggression and your patience.
Right. I love that you picked on consistency. It's my biggest tenet for all relationships. Be it business, be it personal, be it family. If there's not consistency, I can't trust it. I don't trust the intentions of it.
I think that consistency is what sets people who are successful apart from the people who aren't. Because what they don't realize is, you may see me now, right? Like writing a book, getting on Barnes and Noble. It's been years of consistent effort on my part to get me to where I am today. It doesn't just happen in a second. And I think it's the people who keep trying and aren't afraid to fail a little bit, because you learn. Yeah. It's those people that fail that eventually become successes. And it's the people who fail once and stop trying that have to go back into the jobs that they hate because they're afraid of the failure. So if you just about it, I think that goes a long way.
Wow, you've completely nailed it. I'm so proud of what you've been able to create for you and your family. What a beautiful thing. I cannot wait till my book is here. What a great cover. Congratulations on Barnes & Noble. I want to talk to you offline. I think I'll be in New York in September on my way to South Africa, and I think you'd be really great to highlight in my documentary. I'm doing a three-part on the pandemic, but about entrepreneurs and survivors. No politics, just like a time capsule.
I would love that.
Yeah, we're doing the Endemic Project, which is the cause and effect of the pandemic. So I think highlighting your story would be interesting. So we'll talk offline. Yeah, I'll email you.
Africa, hear all about that.
I know, right? I gotta have the book on the plane on my way. So nice. I love it. You guys, get Jessica's new book. Plug it again, Jessica, one more time. Let's hold it up.
One more time. Selfish is a Superpower, and it's available for now on barnesandnoble.com.
I'm so excited, and continued success. thank you for the knowledge and be well.
Thank you. Have a good night.
You too. Thanks, Jessica. All right, guys. I've got Tyler coming up next. Tyler Ramlin, how's it going?
Hi there.
Hey.
It's going good. Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Wonderful. Why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself to the listeners and the viewers?
Yeah, absolutely. My name is Tyler Bramlett. I am the co-founder of a company called WeShape, and our goal is to change how and why people exercise.
Tyler, I'm so glad you're here, my dear. You know, here we are post-endemic, you know, and I was just speaking with the other guest on the line and doing the pandemic film and traveling and like getting, you know, gaining my pandemic pounds. And, you know, we've all were drinking ourselves through it. Some of us were, you know, how are you going to reshape fitness? Because I do need a shot in the arm when it comes to fitness.
Yeah. Well, like I said, the how and the why is really important. So my partner and I have been in the fitness industry for about 20 years each. And so we've seen every trend in the world come through. And one of the things that I think we noticed more than anything over the last 5 or so years was no matter what the trend was, no matter what the tool was, no matter what the, and even if somebody succeeded on it, they still weren't happy with themselves. And so why we're doing this is we want to change fitness from somebody thinking about it as an act of self-judgment. I have to change how I look in order to feel validated outside of myself because people will like me more if I change the way I look, to I want to change the way I feel because I'm worth it. So we're really coming from a different perspective when it comes to the psychology of this. The way that I like to get people to really relate to this is when you show up for your workout, the same way you show up for brushing your teeth because you want your teeth to look pearly white and last a long time, well, then you know you're coming from the right place. And if you continuously show up for your workout because you want to change how you look, then that's not the place we want you to be in. We want to try to slowly turn you around to being in this place of coming out of self-care and self-judgment.
Well put. You know, I think you're right. It is an emotional shift, right? It's a psychological shift, and you really do have to have the right intentions. Just like anything else, you have to, what is your why? And so
what is your why? I love that.
Yeah. What is your why? And then, so can you share with us some of your success stories with kind of turning that on its head for people?
Absolutely.
And finding out their why and shifting that?
Yeah, absolutely. I love that you said the why, because it's a part of our process, right? When we originally decided to start this business, you know, we decided, hey, we want to build a fitness product that's just not a me too. It's not like a Netflix of fitness or like an ab training program or anything like that, right? So we sat down and we said, what could we build that would be genuinely unique? So the workout system that we created is a system that can customize a workout to every single individual user. And it puts it in a follow along video format. And then it allows you to adjust the workout in real time as you're following along. So you might do some push-ups or something on there, and halfway through it'll say, hey, how did this feel for you? Was this too hard, too easy, just right? And depending on your answers, we'll scale the difficulty up, down, or the same. So we wanted to change how people exercise, because to me, fitness is not how many calories can I burn or how much can I pump my muscles to change the way I look. It's how do I give myself the ability to move my body freely for as long as humanly possible. It's about movement freedom. It's about strength, flexibility, balance, coordination, and cultivating confidence that you can do the things you need. Now, as far as the psychological stuff that we already touched on, my favorite thing in the world is when one of our members goes through our process, which is start with connecting with your body through movement, set a new intention, set that why, right? Connect with the community, because God knows we all need people around us to support us through this and recognize we are not alone. And then start analyzing your beliefs one by one. And usually within 30 days, a lot of people, what they do is they walk past the mirror, and instead of saying, look at this muffin top and look at this gross thing and look at this thing, they pause, they realize they're thinking that. And instead they take a deep breath and they say, look at my smile. Yeah. And they start appreciating their body. Because as much as I want everybody to get to self-love, that's where we want people to get to. You can't go from self-hate to self-love quickly. So we start with just subtle areas of appreciation to start building that appreciation towards your body, what it's done for you throughout your life. And it's a game changer once you start rechanging the focus. Because at the end of the day, if you've just judged yourself 10,000 times and that's the pattern you've built, well, we got to start unbuilding the pattern by teaching you to stop judging yourself, become aware of it, and then start appreciating yourself along the way.
Well received and well heard. I think that your why is probably the difference from why other companies might work and yours might. I think that you're on to something really unique here. And a lot of people don't know this because I don't share it, But I was a fitness manager for a while after coming off my track career as a hurdler at Mount SAC. And I was pretty successful in that and then went into fitness for a while before starting in television. And so I remember I'm having flashbacks of the Apex seminars and 24-hour fitness and the goals. And, you know, it's really refreshing to see someone integrate what actually people need rather than what they think they want.
Totally. Totally. It's so important. You know, I think that it's really easy because people, they've all bought into the fitness that marketing and the industry and advertising has given you, right? It's like, get the results in 30 days. It's the quick solution, the quick blah, 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 blah. And the reality is it's taken most people decades to get to where they are. And if they think they're going to break it in 30 days or a couple months, even, it's probably not going to happen. And one of the hardest things to do as an emerging fitness company that's operating out of integrity and this real purpose is to not be the people coming out and saying, you'll get results in 30 days. You're going to lose weight super fast. It's not what we say. And the reason why is we played that game. You know, my partner and I have been in this for a long time. We sold a ton of products online. We were very successful. She likes to say that our Instagram life looked really great, looked really perfect. And then one day, a few years.
It's a highlight reel.
And then we wake up one day and we realize like neither one of us feel truly fulfilled. And how do we become truly fulfilled? And that's when we sat down and both said, you know, what we felt like we needed to do to be truly fulfilled. And I wanted to change the way that people were approaching fitness. I'm a huge fan. I'm a movement expert. I've been doing this for a long time. It came from getting injured in my younger years and having to learn how to overcome injuries and then specializing in training people with injuries and teaching them how to overcome those as well. And so I've been just geeked on movement and moving my body and connecting with the body for decades now. And my partner, you know, she's like every other woman out there that's gotten sucked into this fitness industry that says you should feel horrible about yourself unless you fit this ideal standard. And, you know, since you've been in fitness, Monique, one thing that's really interesting, and I'm sure you'll edify this, was we started interviewing people on our podcast who are fitness models, people like that, not because we were trying to get them to be people to get motivated to be like them, but because we wanted to hear the truth. And you know what the truth was? Truth was, even though I had the ideal body and I won the trophy and the blah, 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 I was miserable. My hormones were dumped. I felt absolutely horrible. Couldn't go out to dinner with my friends because my diet was so strict. I had to go to bed at a certain time, right? People don't realize that that ideal image, it barely exists even on the people you're looking at. The people who you're looking at don't even look like that after all the Photoshop they've been through, right? So stop looking at someone else and wanting to be like them. And start looking at yourself, appreciate what you have, and show up from that place.
Amen. Come from the place of yes within yourself, what feels right within limits. And muscle weighs more than fat is what we'd always say at the gym. So I prefer muscle because it's always burning fat. And, you know, we have three more minutes, but I just want to hit on the hot topics of the summer because I posted something kind of interesting. I posted, was it going to be a hot Ozempic summer or nah? So we know everyone in Hollywood is on Ozempic. What in the hell? What in the nutrition system is going on? What is going on? What do you think?
I wish I could, you know, give you a quick solution to this one. One thing I will say is that everybody wants to have some sort of like biological free lunch, right? They want to go out there and do something that's going to give them the quick results, right? They want to do gastric bypass and Ozempic and hormone replacement and all these different things, right? And there are some situations that can be helpful, right? I don't want to discount that. But the reality is people think that the solution to being skinny is eating less. Right. And at the end of the day, if you take a drug that's going to take away your appetite and you're going to eat less, you better be eating incredibly nutritious foods for everything that you do eat. Otherwise, your tendons, your ligaments, your bone density, your cartilage, everything in your body is going to start to wear down. And you are not going to end your life feeling happier because you were thinner. At the end of the day, the most important thing, if I could fast forward everybody until they're 70 or 80 years old, they would feel how horrible they feel in their body. And you know what they would do? They would say, I better get up. I better start stretching. I better start moving. I better take care of my body. Because fitness is about taking care of your body, not about working your body to the bones so you can change the way you look.
Oh, such. Woo! Tyler's taking us to church on Sunday, everybody. Listen, I love that. And you're right, because your body holds on to it. Because it doesn't know when it's going to get it next. So you're doing the opposite of losing weight. So it's a short-term look. By the way, though, I'm seeing people who haven't lost a lot of weight in a long time just slim up quick. So, hey, it's cute right now. But like Tyler says, will it be cute in 80? Everybody's goals are different. But last thing, Tyler, I'm going to have you back on because I love what you're saying. We have kind of a body dysmorphic issue in the Black community. there's a lot of, you know, BBLs and there's a lot of stuff going on in the Black community to get that slim waist and big donkey booty, as they call it. What has been your experience training people who, have you talked anyone off the ledge from, you know, the dangerous liposuctions and BBLs and things?
No, not personally. I haven't. I've been lucky to specialize in people who, you know, have knee pain, hip pain, things like that. And I'm trying to really help them overcome that and come back to taking care of their bodies. But in the past, when I used to do personal training, I did have a lot of experiences where people would want to turn to that, right?
Yeah.
And I think the reality is there's no harm in delaying things like that, right? If you have a thought process in your mind that says, oh, I want a bigger booty, I want a tighter waist, right? Keep the thought process. Don't distray from it. But instead of just jumping straight to the easy solution, and not recognizing that things like BBLs have higher risk for strokes and heart issues after that, right? Blood clots in the legs. There's all kinds of negative things that can come from this, right? Try to put some real effort into that. Because at the end of the day, you know what? When we earn something ourselves, when you go out there and you hit the gym to get the booty that you want, to get the body that you want, when that's where you came from is I put the work into this, right? You're going to be really damn proud of what you did. But if you go and you pay a bunch of money and somebody injects a bunch of stuff into you or sucks a bunch of stuff out of you, you might look good in the mirror, but you're never going to feel like you really earned it at the end of the day. And I think, again, my message is a little different than that even. It's about stop looking in the mirror and judging yourself. Mm. It's about stop trying to think of the fact that we need to get a surgery in the first place in order to have the body that everybody else thinks we should have. After all, Monique, this body changes every 10 years, right? Right now we're in the big booty, slim waist thing, but back in the 90s, it was like stick figures, right? It changes every 10 years. So why are we trying to hit a moving target? Yeah. Why are we trying to hit this moving target, right? Instead, let's do the long, let's get flexible, let's have balance and coordination across our body so that as we age, we have freedom of movement. And let's let the way that our body looks take care of itself. Let's take care of our body and let the way the body looks take care of itself.
Let's let our genetics lead the way and we be the guide.
Right?
I love it, Tyler. You're coming back on my show. We Shape, guys. Get into it. Get with Tyler and his partner. They're making a new way to shape your life and make it about your why and about, you know, the psychology of fitness. Thank you for being here, Tyler.
Of course. It's my pleasure, Monique. If you guys want to check it out, you can check out weshape.com/thestartup, all one word. And you can try it out if you guys want to from there.
Nice. Way to track it. Beyond.
You got
it. Well done, Tyler. Ciao for now.
Awesome.
All right, guys. I have my next guest, Dr. Lori Morocco is here. Lori, how's it going?
So great. Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Oh, I love it. Welcome. You know, we got a little excited. We were talking about fitness with the last guest, but why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself and tell the listeners and viewers who you are?
Yes. No, I was also very excited about that last segment. I was like, wow, yeah, he's right.
I know he's right.
Well, anyway, I am Dr. Lori Morocco, and I wear a couple different hats. I've been in higher education for 25 plus years as a full-time professor. Now I'm an academic dean, and I'm also a keynote speaker, and I also am a business coach for women. So helping them find success on their own terms so they can be happy and healthy at work, whatever that looks like.
Oh, wow. You know, I've just had so much talent on this show today, and I'm so glad to round it out with you. And it sounds like you keep a really strong calendar, madame.
Yes. What hat am I wearing right now? I have to take a second. But, you know, like all of us, we're all so busy doing so many different things, and it's great. I love a whole bunch of things going on, multitasking.
Yes. And I like that you're specifically right now speaking to females in the industry, whatever industry that is. And it sounds like to me from, you know, your intro that you're specifically speaking to women that have families and friendships and lives outside of work that want to have balance, right? And kids and all of that. Tell us a little bit more about how you approach this.
Well, I speak from experience because I myself have four children. I mean, they're adult children now, but, you know, when they were younger, I just wanted it all. I was going to school to get my PhD. I had two babies at home, but I wanted to be a mom. I wanted to get my education, and I just, you know, my mindset was you can do it all. You can have it all. And that's kind of what I tell women. I'm like, yeah, you can do that. You can do that. And so, you know, started my PhD at 35 with two babies, ended 4 years later with two more babies, worked the whole time.
Wow.
And just, you know, I'm somebody that just like the hat wearing, right? Like, I just think we can do whatever we want to do. And so I just try to be women's biggest cheerleader and say, you got this, you can do this.
Wow. I'm so blown away. I'm never complaining about having homework after my podcast ever again. Like, you are pushing it to the next level, Dr. Morocco. So where do you think you got this from? I'm doing that exploration right now. Yeah. I'm in my applied behavioral science module in my MBA right now.
Okay.
So I'm looking at my why, like, why am I the way I am? How did you get here where you felt empowered to be able to do it all with two babies for the PhD, two babies for each doctorate? Like, how did you get there?
I think I'm just really stubborn and I'm really competitive.
Honest.
Yeah. I mean, I'm competitive with myself and I really, truly wanted everything. I wanted, like I said, to be a mom. I wanted a lot of kids. I wanted a big family. I wanted a career. I wanted to volunteer and help the homeless. I just feel like I am,
Every woman.
I feel like life is short and we have to pack it in. And every moment of every day was just, I needed to be doing something fulfilling for myself or for other people. And I think that's maybe where it came from. I can't say that I grew up with that kind of mindset. I didn't. I was kind of like a rebel. Like, I was just like, I'm going to go my own path and I'm going to do this and do that and figured it out. I literally just figured it out.
Wow. Amazing. Amazing stuff. So where can people link up with you if they want to connect with what you're doing and support your brand?
Oh, thank you. So my website is just my name, lauriemorocco.com. I'm also on LinkedIn under that name, Instagram under that name, and Facebook. My 20 something social media manager wanted me to do some TikToks. It's just not my thing.
You know what? You can have a great time if you just grab a glass of wine or tea or whatever you do and explore TikTok, because it's kind of fun.
It is fun. And I have a 17-year-old daughter and she's always making me do these crazy dances and things.
It's a crazy place. It's like Pee Wee's Big Adventure.
It is. It's just like being vulnerable. Like, I tell everybody else, be vulnerable. Well, I need to sort of tell myself that when it comes to TikTok. So
I agree. But I understand you have to be self-full with your time and delegate that out. What's one tip you can give single moms or moms in general who are in the business world or stepping into a new arena post-endemic, who are maybe shifting, how to manage, what's the time management hack that you might have for them?
Well, so back in the day, I mean, I would, you know, beg my mom and my mother-in-law to watch my kids so that I could get an education and do all these things without having that mom guilt, because mom guilt is huge. I'm sure it's dads have guilt as well, but you know, yes, I had that guilt. I mean, I would say, I had to miss one of my son's first Halloween trick or treat night because I was in school an hour and a half away. And I never forgave myself for that. Like, here he's 22 and I'm still lamenting over the fact that I missed his first Halloween. Guess what?
Oh.
He didn't even know. He didn't even know I was there.
Yeah.
So I would say, let go of the guilt. I think now that we have a lot of opportunities to work from home, I think that's huge for parents so that they can have their babies at home or their kids at home and have this great schedule where they can be flexible and flex their. So I would say if you're going back into the workforce after taking a break, see if you can find those hybrid jobs that allow you to work from home. And, you know, truly, I find that women support other women. And if, you know, your child runs in the background, nobody really cares anymore. after the pandemic.
We've seen it in the news. It's all out from here.
It is. So Yeah, no guilt, and just find opportunities that work for your family so that you can have that work-life balance and not feel that guilt about not being with your kids.
I love it. And I like the key phrase there, your family. Don't compare yourself to others. Mm-hmm. Be in yours. And I love it. Dr. Morocco, thank you for being here. I hope you come back. Continued success. And thank you for being a effing badass.
Sorry. Oh, thank you. Back at you.
All right, sister. I can't wait to see what you do next. Thank you so for happy. Being here. Yes. And what will you start up today? I'll see you guys next Sunday. Bye.
You're listening to The Startup with Monique Leray, only on LA Talk Radio.